Welcome to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We are Flipper, the Family Law Practitioners Association of Queensland. Family law is a wonderfully rewarding career, but is not without its challenges. Join us as we explore the issues that impact on the practice and well-being of family law practitioners. We hope our episodes will not only inform and inspire you, but encourage you to reach your potential. Enjoy this episode.
I'm Matt Taylor, and this is a recurring segment we're calling Things I Wish I Knew, in which I pair a senior member of the profession with a comparatively less experienced practitioner and invite them to chat. Today, the role of sensei will be filled by barrister, mediator, and the very distinguished, dare I say venerable, Neil McGregor. And with him, having been called to the bar in October of 2023, Mr. Blake Hatchment. Welcome, gentlemen. Blake, shall we start with you?
Thanks, Matt. I suppose there's probably a lot of things that I wish I had been told before I came to the bar, and perhaps things that you may have already been told, Neil. But I suppose in your time at the bar, what are some of the things that you've enjoyed and perhaps things that you haven't enjoyed as much, if I can put it nicely?
Yeah. There's a lot of things I enjoy about the actual practice as a barrister, but in particular, for me, I enjoy the being in court, and I enjoy really a good cross-examination. When you know, you can feel it when you sort of hit the sweet spot when you're cross-examining and things are going well. It's not so good when you don't hit that sweet spot and you get the wrong answer, but part of our training is to avoid questions that are going to give you the wrong answer. So dislike is probably when you've set things up well for your client and then you are sitting while your client's being cross-examined and you get that feeling that all you want to do is sit under the bar table and hide, and you've got to sit and put on a brave face as if nothing is getting through to you, and then you've got to work it from there. Then comes into advocacy when you're making submissions to try to pull the case back together. And so, look, those things are a mixture of likes and dislikes. You can't have everything go the way you want it to go all the time. And so that's when you really have to dig deep and start, you know, coming up with some argumentative skills and things of that nature, or just taking a slightly different tack. It's busy. Sometimes the dislikes are the pressure of time that you've got to prepare something ready for trial, and you've got another brief stacked up waiting, and you know that you're going to be burning the midnight oil, but that just comes with the territory. It's something you get used to.
That was certainly something I had heard a lot about before I came to the bar, was the pressures and the burning the midnight oil, and especially when, as you said, you've got stacked up brief, you know, trial after trial. What do you do to kind of manage that, or how do you deal with it?
Well, it gets easier. As the more experience you get, you can read things a lot faster. You sort of know what's coming, even though you don't actually know. But there's a lot of a brief that you can skim and get to the more important parts where you're going to want to cross-examine, and you can focus on those. You probably don't have to do as much legal research, although that's still a good idea even at my stage of the game, because there's always more recent cases that you can come up with that might be more relevant to the judge. Maybe there's a twist in what you thought the law was, and you really have to be on top of those. But you sort of keep an eye on that as you are going through your day-to-day life as a barrister, so that you when you have a problem in a case, there's something that tells you, I need to look at this particular point again because there's something recent about it. So I think it gets easier just through experience, just through that store of knowledge that you collect. That's the way I feel about it anyway.
Yeah. Do you do anything in terms of, I suppose, managing the workload In terms of setting aside days or, you know, making sure that you block out time just to have time to yourself, as opposed to, especially when you've got that really big block of trials.
Not really is the answer to that. You know, each case depends, you know, you've just got to do what you have to do, and it takes as long as it's going to take. And then I tend to worry about the next one when I finish that. At times, you know, you're not absolutely focusing on one case at any one time. If you know that there are certain cases you've got lined up that are coming up, and you see some authorities that might assist you, well, you'll just earmark them, make a note of them or whatever. So you are actually preparing at all times leading up to the trial that you might be going to do or the appeal you're going to do. I just don't think it's delineated by putting trials into boxes, although largely, you know, that trial that you're in before Judge X demands all of your attention at the time. But in between, during adjournments or overnight or whatever, you don't stop thinking about the other ones that are on your shelf waiting to be prepared. And I think subconsciously we're preparing trials all the time. And it seems to work. It's probably not very scientific, but it's worked for me. So, Blake, you've just recently come to the bar, about 12 months, is that right?
Yeah, coming up to 12 months. Yeah. So October this year will be
right.
Be that mark for
How
me.
How have you enjoyed it?
Great so far.
Yeah.
I certainly haven't looked back. I think something that you said in terms of what you liked at the bar and what you enjoyed being in court was definitely one of those landmarks for me about, or one of the tells for me that I wanted to come to the bar as opposed to being a solicitor.
Right. Mm. And when you were a solicitor, did you appear in court as a solicitor advocate? Or?
For interim hearings, I did, but no trials. I was always briefing. I think something, at least from my practice as a solicitor, just with the file loads that I know a lot of solicitors would have as well, it's so difficult with the amount of time that usually goes into preparing cross-examination, things like that. But it was always something better to have a barrister do, from my perspective as a solicitor.
But in a way, you see, that's helped to prepare you for the bar, because sitting in court and watching the court proceedings go through, listening to cross-examinations, listening to submissions, listening to the individual judges dressing people down or witnesses down, that's all experience that is invaluable. I still, if I've got time, instead of just walking the floors, if there's an interesting trial, I'll go and sit in. It doesn't matter how senior or junior the practitioners are that are in the matter, you still pick up points. You know, sometimes they're good points. You know, fresh eyes have a fresh way of dealing with things, and it's quite enlightening to listen and just see what they've done. Conversely, of course, you can see some mistakes being made that it reinforces it, or don't do that. I don't think you can ever grow out of that. I think that we've always got something to learn. It's like some of the conferences, you think, oh, I don't need to go to that, I've heard that all before. But there's always a twist that is helpful. And those are the twists that stick in the mind when you are on your feet.
Yeah, and that's certainly something, obviously, in our readership year at the bar, we have to do a set amount of hours observing more senior members of the profession. And that's something that I've definitely enjoyed, being able to sit in the back of the court with no real horse in the race.
Yeah.
And just being able to really pay attention to what the judge is looking at, what they're commenting on, and what each counsel involved in the matter and how the witnesses are dealing, how everyone's responding to it. I think there's a real place for not only barristers but also solicitors to, if you have the opportunity, it's hard with everyone's kind of workloads and time constraints. But if you have the opportunity, as you said, instead of walking around the floors at court, to sit in the back and just and take note of what's happening.
Yeah. The other thing is to use more senior people as mentors. Not even just senior people, but everyone around you. Bounce ideas off, talk it through, get advice. It all helps. You may reject a lot of things that you hear, but it's part of that mental exercise of sieving what you are told and determining what you're going to use, what suits your purposes, because ultimately you're the person standing up, making the submissions or asking the questions, and you have to be comfortable with where things are going. It's interesting. There's an awful lot of mind gymnastics that you have to engage in to practice, I think. How have you found dealing with lay people, the clients, you know, because it's an awfully emotional area that we are indulging in, I think takes a lot of psychology, a lot of empathy, and sometimes some just downright good but hard advice that has to be given to clients. Are you comfortable with doing all of that?
Yeah, I think that's something, and I think it's something that you can tell, particularly when you've got solicitors that have really reality tested clients. And I think that was something that I was mindful of coming from a family law solicitor background, but it's a really tough area that we all practice in. And you're dealing with, you know, not only people who are just seeking a particular outcome from a court, but you're dealing with, you know, a breakdown of their relationship. They're obviously going through a tough time in their lives, and you're often dealing with not only their property, but also children and their entire family unit. So that's something that I always try to keep in my mind when you're giving advice. We obviously have to give frank advice because otherwise wouldn't be really helping them if we sugarcoat anything. But yeah, keeping in mind that you're dealing with people, people and families, and you've got to take into account that they are going to be emotional and really tailor it to that. I think that usually helps them come to terms with, particularly if you're not giving advice that they might want to hear, it really helps them to understand that you have to give them this advice, but it, you know, helps them to know that you understand that it's not what they want to hear and they are going to be struggling to cope with it.
The system itself helps in that, I find. I think when you look at all the times that people appear before the court, from the first appearances before judicial registrars and then senior judicial registrars and then, you know, mentions before judges and the dealings that they're having with their solicitors through time, sooner or later in that process, they will be getting the message that what they are looking for just isn't feasible. And often I've found that they get to my stage where we're about to walk into court and you give them the advice that you think that they may not have heard. You've been warned by the solicitor, this client doesn't listen. And I've found that on a number of occasions I've simply given the advice and the client has just caved straight away. And the look on the solicitor's face is priceless because the jaw drops.
So I remember that.
They say, how did you do that? And really, it's not me. It's just the cumulative effect of the system and the fact that they are just about to walk into court and either win or lose in a big way. And, it's quite rewarding that.
Yeah.
Mm. So where do you see yourself maybe in the next 5 years?
Hopefully still here.
Yeah.
Still practicing. I really enjoy practicing in family law. So I hope that I just continue to build my practice and really just get further experience and keep building on that. But certainly I think hopefully still practicing, maybe a bit, you know, more well known in terms of being over and appearing in front of the judges that we have over there a bit more. But
There's a lot of scope to get a lot of appearances, you know, particularly with the Section 102NA scheme, which, you know, I used to do a lot of it, but I've steered away from it now. But there's still a lot of openings for people to do that work. It doesn't pay terribly well and it can be quite stressful, but it's a great way to get experience.
Yeah, it is. It is.
But you really have to look after the practical side as well. One of the big faults, I guess, with being at the bar is that we don't set aside money for tax. We should do, because it's a real strain when tax time comes around and you're starting to do quarterly tax payments and the like. Make sure you calculate what you should be putting aside each week or each month, and do that religiously, because it's not pleasant when you realize you're probably about to go into debt further for that. You know, keep on top of your administration, keep on top of your, you know, CPD points, and just extending your education all the time. It is a real godsend to do those sort of things. And look after yourself. Look after yourself physically and mentally. You know, I don't think we appreciate what sort of mental strain or emotional strain some of what we do, how much it affects us. You know, I've had times during my career where I've just thought, I want to give this up. You know, it's too much. But there's a thing called compassion fatigue, and it is similar to post-traumatic stress disorder, and I think it's recognized as a mental illness, and you just need to take steps to try to ensure that you avoid that by debriefing. You know, there's no shame in going to professionals and getting assistance if you are feeling the stress. It's much better to do that early rather than later. And of course, physical exercise is one of the best releases, as I understand it, for the stress that we do feel. And have, you know, budget for holidays, because we need them. I don't think we're alone in that, but I think we deal with an awful lot of stress. And one day, if we don't deal with it, we'll pay the price, whether that be a heart attack or dementia or something like that. Pretty fatal.
Yeah, yeah. I think very, very important that we all kind of keep that in mind.
Yeah.
Thank you for all your time.
That's right.
This afternoon.
It's a pleasure.
And certainly imparting on me and hopefully everyone else that listens, all of the takeaways that you've had, I've certainly taken a lot from it.
Great. No, it's nice to meet you, and I wish you well.
Thank you.
We'll be opposing each other shortly.
Look forward to that.
That's the thing, isn't it? It doesn't matter how senior or junior the person is. A good adversary is a good adversary. And I've found indeed that some of the litigants in person who can keep their emotions at bay are the toughest opponents because they know the facts inside out. That they just can't be underestimated.
Yeah.
So there you have it, people. There's no easy way to give the hard advice. There's no age at which you should stop learning. Thank you, Neil. Thank you, Blake. Thanks for listening.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Flipper Talks, a family law podcast. We hope you enjoyed the podcast today. We confirm that the information we discussed today was just that, information for educational and entertainment purposes only. It is not specific advice. If something discussed has you considering whether you should take steps, it is important to make sure you get professional advice about your unique situation before you proceed, whether that be legal, financial, accounting, medical, or other advice. Please reach out to Flipper if there's another topic you'd like explored, and if you know someone who might benefit from the show, remember to tell them about it. Thank you for listening.